You will, no doubt, have heard or read of cases of people being earthbound and wondered how this comes about and what binds them to the earth. In such cases where I have accosted earthbound people, I have always ascertained that the soul so circumstanced was totally unaware of any other state of existence to which he could depart from his present surroundings. He was ignorant of other realms higher or lower than that which he was occupying. Usually, these unfortunate people are tied to their earthly environment, whatever it may be. That attachment may be one of sentiment, where a great affection was entertained for the earthly home, or place of residence, or work. The attraction may be a morbid one, where some misdeed has been committed which draws back the guilty one to the scene of its perpetration. Perhaps this latter is the most familiar to earth people under the designation of haunted places, and many people are puzzled by the fact that in a large number of cases the subject of the haunting has remained in operation for hundreds of years. What makes the matter still more puzzling is when the individual who is responsible for the haunting has all the appearance of being a goodly soul, without any intention of harming or alarming a single person. What is it that causes him to stay in this spot for these hundreds of years when, presumably, he could be much better employed elsewhere in the spirit world? The answer is that in many instances he is so employed. But you will remember that upon earth there is a familiar saying that it takes all kinds to make a world. Similarly, it takes all kinds to make a spirit world. Bear that in mind, and remember, too, that a person is exactly the same the moment after he has died as he was the moment before. No magical, instantaneous change takes place either of mind or body. We pass into the spirit world with all our earthly likes and dislikes, all our fancies and foibles, all our idiosyncrasies, and with all our religious errors fast upon us. We are just as we were on earth, though it does not follow in every instance that we will behave just as we did on earth. In the spirit world we have more freedom of expression, and gravitating, as we do, to our own temperamental and spiritual kind, we are not diffident of giving open expression to our thoughts and feelings, and thus presenting, at last, a true picture of ourselves as we really are. Some minds are quick to grasp new ideas and new truths. Some are quick to grasp truth in place of falsehood or untruth. People of this mental caliber soon readjust their views, and so become in harmony with their new life and surroundings. They will settle down for the time being, at least, in their environment. A great number show no further interest in their old earthly life and mode of living, but will concentrate all their energies upon the larger world that is opening out before them. But there are people who had, while on earth, and still possess now that they are in the spirit world, a sentimental attachment to some place or building. For some reason with which, strictly speaking, they alone are concerned, they show no particular wish to sever that attachment. Their interest remains as strong as when they were dwelling there and on earth. They are keenly sensitive of its welfare and vicissitudes, and they take their leisure hours in constantly visiting and revisiting the scene of their former pleasures or activities. At length the time will come when they will grow tired of these visits back and forth, with very little actual purpose behind them beyond satisfying a certain curiosity. Then the visits will cease altogether, and the soul will be really free at last. For such ties have no value in them spiritually when the visitor, who is sometimes seen, sometimes only felt, and at other times both seen and felt, merely returns to satisfy his own interest and curiosity. To return to the earth with the specific purpose of helping former colleagues or friends is another matter altogether. Many such people as I have mentioned to you are simple-minded folk who display a certain stubbornness on occasion, and are consequently deaf to our suggestions of terminating their haunting of some particular dwelling on earth. But, in common with us all, if they choose to exercise their free will to its full extent, we are powerless to intervene, and they must pursue their own course. Individuals of this sort are only partially earthbound. They live in their own proper realm in the spirit world, making frequent and solitary, but regular, visits to the place that draws them so powerfully. The haunting of an unpleasant nature where some crime of violence has been committed, or where some wrong has remained unredressed, falls into a different category altogether. In most instances, individuals remain rooted to the locality. They may still be in the same frame of mind as upon the original occasion of their misdeed. They may be consumed with the desire for vengeance or retribution, or for some form of violence. So strong will be the concentration of mind and so powerful the emotion, that the whole incident or series of incidents will be projected from this harassed mind in the shape of thought forms, and these will assume the precise details, with exact precision, of the original occurrence. The memory will have recorded the details faithfully, and the mind will have released them, and it can go on releasing them with unfailing exactitude. Any person whose psychic powers are developed, and sometimes those that are not, will see what is taking place before them and thereby causing the haunting. Occasionally, so powerful is the thought concentration of the earthbound soul that the whole phenomenon will, as it were, be forced into the earth world for anyone to see or hear who should come within range of the manifestation. That such haunting should go on for hundreds of years in the same place with similar exactness in each repetition, is not very remarkable when one considers the wide diversity of human minds. The harmless sentimentality of the visitant to old scenes of earthly endeavor can possess a degree of emotional feeling just as strong and binding upon the mind as that of the perpetrator of some crime whose thirst for revenge, shall we say, caused the crime which is now holding him so tenaciously to the earth. In cases of the latter kind, people on earth could afford the spirit world very valuable assistance in relieving of their burden the minds of these tortured souls, or, at least, in giving them some amelioration of their unhappy condition. But so great a number of these occurrences are treated as something to investigate, firstly, to see if the alleged haunting is really true, and then, after establishing the fact that something queer does take place, to study the thing with a view, if possible, to seeing what it is all about. After that, long reports are made from eyewitnesses' accounts, the veridical nature of the phenomena is proved, and there the matter rests. In the meanwhile, the soul who has been the cause of this learned investigation still languishes in his misery. If at the very outset the investigators would interrogate the object of the disturbances, and would pray for aid to be sent from the higher realms of the spirit world, not only would unpleasant disturbances be thus terminated, but what is more important, the unhappy cause of them would be helped in his misery and his foot set upon the path of progression. It is always so much easier, and produces much better results, for people still on earth to tackle these cases in the first instance. The person who is responsible for the haunting is so much nearer the earth, and is consequently more easily approached by you than by us here in the spirit world. When he has fully grasped what has happened and what he is doing, then we can take charge of him and lead him away from the environment that is causing the distress. The mode of one's entry into the spirit world as a permanent resident is the same in every case, through the severance of the magnetic cord, although the physical cause may vary in such ways as are perfectly familiar to you, accident, illness, or old age. But what may happen to us immediately after the cord is severed may vary infinitely according to the multiplicity of human temperaments which go to make up the populations of the earth, and according to the wide divergence in degrees of spirituality possessed by the new arrivals. Circumstances diversify individual cases to such an extent that it would require many volumes to recount even a part of the experiences of others in the matter of arrival in the spirit world alone. We can only treat the matter in a broad sense. Among the physical causes of dissolution, it would seem that illness would account for the largest number in normal times. What happens to the individual in such cases depends upon several factors. For example, the length of the illness, and its painfulness or otherwise, and the mental makeup of the individual. Long illness has a tiring effect upon the spirit body, it would be more accurate to say an inhibiting effect upon the spirit body, and when, at last, the physical body is cast off, the spirit body usually goes to one of the numerous halls of rest with which the spirit world is plentifully supplied. There the new resident will pass into a state of pleasant sleep, ultimately to awake fully refreshed and reinvigorated. The time, as you regard it, taken to achieve this course of treatment varies, of course, to meet individual requirements. With some, a comparatively short space of time will serve, with others it might take months of your earthly time. In my own case, I was ill for only a brief while upon earth. When I passed into the spirit world, I did so without losing consciousness. I was able to gaze upon my physical body, which I had just vacated, and a friend and colleague of my earthly days, who had passed on before me, came to me at the instant of my departure from earth, and took me to my new home in the spirit world. After a brief survey of my new abode, my friend recommended that I should take a rest in view of the fact that I had just quitted a final bed of sickness. I did so in my own house. I allowed myself to lapse into a most delightful state of slumber, feeling that I had not a care in the world. When I awoke, I felt in a vigorous and perfect state of health such as I had never experienced before. I do not know precisely how long I lay sleeping, but I was told it was very brief, indeed, of much less duration than the illness that had caused my passing into the spirit world. In considering the painfulness or otherwise of the illness that causes death, I think that the length of the illness and its painfulness could be linked together, for they both give a form of fatigue to the spirit body, though this fatigue must not be thought of in terms of earthly physical fatigue. The two are not really comparable. With us there is no heaviness of the limbs, no aching joints, no leaden weariness that makes the very movement of ourselves a misery to us, nor yet must it be thought that our fatigue is comparable with your earthly mental tiredness, where you have the inability to focus the mind upon anything except for the briefest possible time. Nor, again, do we lack interest in our affairs, or feel restless and ill at ease. The word fatigue is the best that I can find. There really is no word that adequately describes the condition. With you, who are incarnate, physical energy will be expended during the course of your daily life until such time as it is necessary for you to rest. Rest is essential to you if you are to continue to function upon the material plane of the earth. When you retire to rest and to sleep, and while your spirit body is absent, your physical body is replenished with the energy that keeps you alive and active. Your body is, as it were, charged with force enough to carry you through your day and beyond it, if necessary. It constitutes a reservoir of force. With us it is different. Force is continuously flowing through us from the source of all life. We are a channel for this inexhaustible energy which flows to us according to our needs of the moment. We have only to ask for a greater supply of force for some special purpose or for the accomplishment of some particular task upon which we are engaged, and it is immediately forthcoming. We have no need to recharge ourselves through the medium of sleep as do you. Our fatigue, for want of that better word, is more in the nature of a desire for a change from what we are doing, whether it be pleasure or work which is occupying our energies. A desire for a change from what we are doing is a natural one common to both our worlds, yours and ours, but with us prolonged activities never lead to literal tiredness of the limbs or of the mind. We could pursue the course of our work far, far beyond the limits that are imposed upon you on earth without any loss of efficiency in our task. We could, and we do, work for a number of hours that would seem incredibly long to you, without the slightest ill effect either to ourselves or to our work. There seems to be an idea among certain schools of thought upon earth that in the spirit world we are employed upon the same work for all eternity. Possibly this strange notion is but a variation of the absurd idea of a spirit life of eternal rest, upon which I have already spoken to you. The spirit world is not static, neither are all its inhabitants forever occupied upon the same tasks, unremittingly and never changing. The work may never cease, but there are regular occasions when we cease to work. Among the glories of the life in the spirit world are the opportunities for as constant change as taste demands. We do not stagnate, or travel in a groove from which we cannot extricate ourselves. The desire for change of some sort comes upon us, and we change forthwith. That is our fatigue, as near as it is possible to describe it to you. The rest of the newly arrived person is frequently advisable, or necessary, to allow of adjustment of the spirit body to its new conditions of life. It has been accustomed to being very securely fastened to the physical body, where it can receive whatever unpleasantness the physical body may be submitted to during the course of its earthly term. An alert mind can quickly throw off these physical repercussions and adjust itself to the new life. Other types of mind will be slower and more leisurely. The long and painful illness will be one of the pleasantness to which I have just referred, and although an alert mind can soon clear itself of recent experiences, still it may take a little time, and so a period of rest is undergone. In no sense is the spirit body impaired by any earthly illness that caused its permanent transference to the spirit world. But earthly illness reacts upon the mind, which in turn bedims whatever natural brightness the spirit body may possess. It is purely a matter of thought and has no reference at all to the personal brightness of spiritual progression. No ill health or illness can take that away. A period of rest will therefore restore the spirit body to its proper and natural tone, both of color and harmony with its life and surroundings. With us, rest is a very elastic term. One may take rest through so many varieties of ways. Indeed, it is perfectly commonplace to see someone busily at work here displaying all the industry in the world, to discover that in reality he is resting. So that anyone may be resting for all there is to show to the contrary. How is a person affected whose death is sudden and perhaps violent as well, which would include the person who is precipitated into the spirit world without warning, or that knowing the end of earthly life is imminent yet undergoes a violent transition? How would such a person fare? It calls to mind the phrase that was once such a favorite with certain types of minds launched into eternity. What dreadful images this stupid phrase must have conjured up in the minds of so many people. The awful tragedy of death which all men must face. The terrible uncertainty of what was to happen after they had departed this life. The fearful prospect of being marched before the great dread judge, most of them having been told that they were miserable sinners. The best that could be hoped for would be mercy, provided that they believed on something or other that was so obscure in its meaning that they could not make head or tail of it, but which nevertheless possessed some magic means of saving them. Which was it to be, heaven or hell? Most probably the latter, from their obvious failure to reach the impossible standard set by their religious teachers. Of what is there to be frightened in eternity? To us, one of the greatest and most glorious truths is the very fact of this same eternity. But of that I will speak in due course. For the moment our question is waiting to be answered. In speaking of people passing into the spirit world suddenly, you no doubt will recall where, for example, failure of the heart's action is the cause, and where an accident or some deliberate action causes an instantaneous transition. In the latter instance you would be forcibly reminded of what takes place during the evil times of war upon the earth. Such transitions as these are not what could be considered in any way normal had other conditions prevailed. Normal transition, from the point of view of the spirit world, is that wherein the spirit body becomes gradually and easily detached from the earthly body in a slow and steady process of separation. The magnetic cord, in such cases, will become detached from the earthly body gently. It will fall away naturally, just as the leaf falls from the tree in the autumn. When the leaf is in full life and vigor, it requires a strong action to dislodge it from the tree. And so it is with the spirit body. In the young, the cohesion is firm, but it gradually lessens as age increases. When people on earth reach the autumn of their lives, like the leaf of the tree, the spirit body is less firmly attached to the physical body. One reads of people reaching a great age upon earth, and then one day, in apparently good health, they are found to have died in the chair in which they were sitting. They have, in fact, gone quietly to sleep in a normal healthy fashion, and the magnetic cord had separated itself also in a normal healthy fashion. That is an ideal transition. When, therefore, the earthly body suddenly collapses and the organs cease functioning, As in the case of some illnesses, there is not a great deal of shock transmitted to the spirit body. A person so situated will be in a state of great bewilderment, which will be increased by lack of knowledge of the ways of the spirit world. Orthodox religious views will also add their considerable weight to the general confusion of mind. And even in cases where a good sound knowledge of spirit life is possessed, there is bound to be some little momentary confusion in the mind. That is impossible to avoid. The mind may have been focused exclusively upon material affairs, and it would require a second daughter to apprehend what has happened, to collect the faculties, to use the earthly term. How easy our work in the spirit world would be if all transitions were in the latter category. It is when he come to transitions where the physical body is literally disintegrated, blown into fragments in a second of time, that the greatest distress and discomfort are caused to the spirit body. The magnetic cord is snapped off, or wrenched away, almost as though a limb of the physical body were torn from its socket. The spirit body finds itself suddenly dispossessed of its earthly tenement, but not before the physical shock of disintegration has been transmitted to the spirit body. Not only is there extreme bewilderment, but the shock has something of a paralyzing effect. The person so situated may be incapable of movement for the time being. In many instances, sleep will intervene. He will remain in the place of his dissolution, but we come to his rescue and carry him away to one of the rest homes specially provided for such cases. Here he will receive treatment from experts, and ultimately the patient will recover his full health beyond any shadow of doubt. The cure is certain and complete. There's no such thing as a relapse or a recurrence of the indisposition. Perhaps the most difficult part of the treatment comes when a full consciousness is restored and the patient begins to ask questions. What effect, you might ask, does maiming of the physical body have upon the spirit body? None whatever, as far as the full complement of limbs and organs is concerned. Disintegration may be sudden, or it may take a number of earthly years through the normal processes of decomposition. Whichever way it may take place, the result is the same: a complete, or almost complete, disappearance of that physical body. The physical body is corruptible, but the spirit body is incorruptible. And what applies to the whole in the latter also applies to the limbs and organs, in fact to every part of the spirit body. The loss of one or more limbs of the earthly body, the possession of diseased organs, physical malformations, any subnormal or supernormal conditions of the physical body, any or all of these states leave the spirit body entirely unaffected. Whatever has happened to the physical body, the spirit body will always maintain its complete anatomy. But the spirit body can assume very hideous spiritual malformations. These have nothing whatever to do with the formation of the physical body, but are due solely to the kind of life that its owner has led upon earth. The malformations are various expressions of the hideousness that is resident within the mind, on many occasions that have found their outward expression in evil deeds of every description. These, however, do not come within the purview of our question. People who believe that after their death there will be a bodily resurrection are oftentimes puzzled in mind as to what will happen if they are not possessed of their full number of limbs, or, what is worse but more common, if their earthly body completely vanished in the course of time, or is instantaneously disintegrated. The trouble comes from the use of the word resurrection. Such people imagine that the normal procedure is for the physical body to rise up from its grave, if it should possess one, at some future and unspecified date, whereupon it would find itself in the spirit world. It is fondly supposed that missing limbs would be restored and impaired faculties renewed, or if necessary, the physical body would be reintegrated after the fragments, in some inconceivable manner, have been collected and reassembled after their total disappearance. The whole conception is, of course, fantastic. Once dissolution has taken place, the physical body is finished with as far as its former owner is concerned. It has no place whatever in the spirit world. It cannot enter there. and there is no magical process in existence that can so alter its constituents or form or mode of being as to be able to penetrate into spirit realms of any degree of weight or lowness, of light or darkness, whatsoever. A profession of faith that such a thing is possible is of no avail. It simply cannot happen because it is against the laws of the spirit world. And these are natural laws, not laws that have been enacted by someone and can therefore be suspended or annulled at will. To carry the matter still further, there is no such thing as resurrection of either the physical body or of the spirit body. As far as the spirit body is concerned, there is no rising. There is simply a continuity of existence. From the moment that life is given to the physical body, the spirit body is also in existence. The earthly body comes to the end of its life, it ceases to function and so to provide an earthly vehicle for the spirit body, and the spirit body is released and continues its life in the spirit world, in its proper element and its true home. No resurrection has taken place. Nothing of the sort is needed. It has nothing to wait for. No day of judgment or other unpleasant prospect. The spirit body is free at last, unencumbered by its heavy earthly body, free to move and breathe, and enjoy the beauties of the realms of light. And now, I think we have lingered long enough upon the threshold of the spirit world, and it is time that we passed through the great portal into the realms of light, where we can discuss other matters not so closely connected perhaps with the actual dissolution of the physical body. Let us consider the spirit body and discuss some questions of its life in the spirit world, and perhaps in the process we may be able to smooth away a difficulty or two. The spirit world, I mentioned the word eternity to you just now. It is a word that implies so much but that in reality conveys so little to the average earthly mind. The earth dweller would say, in effect, that eternity is like immortality. You cannot prove it. How can it possibly be proved that a certain state of existence, namely, that of the spirit world, will continue forever, without end, to employ perhaps a more emphatic term? Just so. It is a difficulty that we all appreciate in the spirit world. And I would hasten to say that I am not going to attempt to prove it. But I can do this. I can set before you one or two considerations that will serve to draw your mind towards the major differences between your incarnate state of existence upon earth and our discarnate state of existence in the spirit world. And in doing so there may emerge just a faint glimmering of what the word eternity can suggest. If you will give the subject a brief moment's thought, you will be forcibly reminded of the impermanence of life on earth. Living, as you do, with reality, for so you would term it manifested to you so very obviously in life itself and all that goes to constitute living upon earth, with, for example, the buildings that surround you, the ground upon which you walk, the food you eat, the clothing wherewith you cover yourself, your daily occupations and recreations, your comings and goings over short distances and long, confronted as you are with all these evidences of being, and many others besides. Yet you know that upon one day in your life the moment will come when you must leave all these realities behind you to undergo the natural process of the dissolution of the physical body, in a word, when you will die. But before that event occurs, and during the whole of your life on earth, you will observe the process of disintegration going on all around you. Firstly, yourself. You will become older, the signs of which are sufficiently familiar to you to need no mention of them. Your clothes are constantly wearing out and need replacement. The furnishings within your home undergo the same process and require the same remedy. Your very house is in a constant state of decay, though not always visible to the eye, until one day repairs of one sort or another will be demanded. Call to mind, also, the many articles of daily use that by accident you can break. Even your own bones are not immune from that. So that there is constantly going on around you this action of decay. Everything about you on earth is corruptible. There is, then, a palpable state of impermanence. However much the decay may be arrested, you still have the certain fact of the eventual termination of your earthly life, which in itself sets the seal upon mundane impermanence. Now let us contrast all this with life in the spirit world and with the dwellers therein. Perhaps one of the most heartening, reassuring of feelings that we in the spirit world can harbor is a feeling of permanence. Firstly, as to ourselves, we are incorruptible.